Hi, I'm Bonsu.
I'm Bryn.
And I'm Nick, and this is Chalk It Up, a podcast that celebrates all things Sussex through stories and conversations with inspiring local people. In this episode, we talk with artist, builder and writer Patrick Kerry about his adventures around Sussex, finding inspiration for his material-led artwork and the idea behind Full Circle Living as a way to live an ethical and fulfilling life by bringing nature and community closer together. We hope you enjoy listening.
You've spent time walking and cycling around Britain, exploring, observing, foraging and making things from the things you find. Can you share some of those stories with us and tell us how some of these adventures might have influenced you?
You say in Britain it's mostly Sussex-based. Sussex-based adventures, because I just want to get under all of the layers of landscape and community that we have in Sussex. So that's my main priority of where I travel is, close to home.
Okay.
And yeah. I meet people through Instagram. I get messages from people that invite me to go for walks and stuff and tell me of great things that are going on, and I just like joining the dots up. My adventures are predominantly like close to home.
When did it start? When was your first sort of exploration out, and how do you travel, and for how long do you go away for?
The first was out of curiosity. I'd be at home early or late teenager, early 20s, and I'd just be curious of what's around the corner, and I'd go a bit further each time. So it starts in Heywood's Heath, which is where I live, and it slowly filter out, so I'd be out for longer each time. And yeah, just try to be gentle with my journey. So I don't tend to drive. I'll get the train if I'm going further, and then start from there. But sometimes I'm out all night and coming back the next morning, or I could be out for a week or two. Just see what happens, really. There's quite a few trails we've got in Sussex. So Serpent Trail, which took us four days to walk. That was between COVID lockdowns and stuff, so there's no shops open, no pubs to get refills of water, and it was just great. There's no deal about, and it goes all through it's the shape of a snake, hence the name Serpent Trail. And it goes through Heathland, where snakes usually are.
And whereabouts is that?
It starts in Hazelmere and finishes in Liss, I think.
Okay.
West Sussex, deepest West Sussex.
And you cycle sometimes, don't you?
Yeah.
Is it Roderick the Red or something?
Roderick the Red is a good lad.
So you have been around a bit on the bike, haven't you?
Yeah.
A bit further afield there, but as well.
Yeah. Recently got back from cycling to Land's End, that sort of area. That Land's End wasn't my finish. It wasn't my goal. It was to get to that area. So I got to Sennan Cove and then started going up the coast a bit. But yeah, that took 12 days cycling, which it was. I could have done it faster, and probably would have a few years ago. But I wanted to have some self discipline and go slow. So I was doing 30 miles a day, which, you could do quite a few in the morning and then the rest in sort of early afternoon, and then just chill out in between, halfway through the day, and just sat on random benches in the middle of little villages and just watched the market going on and people walking around, and just really took my time. So it was good to have that self-discipline. But I still went fast, going up Dartmoor and then back down, and the hill's just dangerous. You know, like you're going car speeds on a bike, and if you fall off, it's like, it's not what I'm thinking about. But
you think about it afterwards, don't you?
Yeah.
After you've done it, you're like, oh, yeah, that was a bit close. Yeah.
It's just too fast. But the other option is to sit on the brake, and then that's even worse.
And do you go with other people, or do you travel alone?
Mostly alone, but Instagram gives me that community, so people ask me if I put it out there or say I'm going to go and do this trail for like this amount of time. Does anyone want to come? Like half the time, nobody's even interested. So I'm like, yes, go away. But as soon as you leave the house, you're not alone. Like there's people to talk to.
Yeah,
you go in here, it's just someone to talk to. Like someone, especially in the mornings, like it's great.
Yeah,
like dog walkers and stuff, and they ask you like, did you stay out? Like, oh no, and I was like, yeah. And then, just people just like give you a little boost, you know.
That's interesting. Are people in the morning just inherently, do you think, just a bit friendlier, a bit more approachable?
Maybe. It's just like, it's all the time, really. Like, you've got places in Sussex that are like Ditch and Beacon and stuff, and you know, people have just got out of the car for like a 10-minute walk and they head down and stuff. And same with them, like in town. Not too sure about Lewis, I don't really spend too much time in Lewis, but everyone's head down. They don't say hello to you. But if you're in the middle of nowhere,
it's hard to ignore.
They can't ignore you. So, you know, if I'm traveling alone, as soon as I see someone, I'm like, I need to talk to someone. So I'm going to chew this person's ear off, you know? So, yeah, like, it depends where you are in the world. If you're just on a little footpath, they're most likely to talk to you. But, in towns and busy places like Ditch and Beacon, like, yeah, just head down, don't even acknowledge you half the time. Unless they've got a big backpack and then they're just exactly the same, they want to talk. Inherently that, I think that might be the worst, or it might not be, but mostly people in Sussex are just super friendly and just.
And what do you take with you when you go on these ventures? And do you know at the start how long you're going to go for? Or is it a little bit more free and easy? You know, you're not quite sure when you're going to come back.
I take as little as possible. Sometimes just a bivy bag and a sleeping bag and a camping mat.
Yeah.
A little stove to make a coffee or hot chocolate in the evening, you know. A bit of food, water, filter, stuff like that. And then it's the most minimum possible. Yeah, sometimes a tent, but... Yeah.
Do you make your own shelters? If you have to and you don't have a tent?
I take a tarp sometimes and just string it up against like a little fence or tree or something. So
is the reason that you take as little stuff as possible purely because of like the weight and having to lug it around, or is there something that you like about that, the minimalism of that kit? What's the thinking behind it?
It's both.
Okay.
I want to, don't want to carry fancy things that, you know, if I've got my phone and stuff, I do take it, but I'm more likely to share it, like, on the internet. And all of those, like, frivolous things take away your energy from that moment. So, yeah, I do take a camera as well, but again, you can't just share that easily. I just wish I can just leave my phone at home, but you sort of need it for emergencies.
Yeah, it's hard to leave behind.
But mostly weight, I would have thought, but also I'm quite a minimalist, so I don't have anything that I don't use regularly.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't necessarily take something that I'm not going to use.
And it's... A large part of the reason why you enjoy it or what you get out of it, that being present, for that experience and
that
is that what's the big draw for you?
Yeah, that, just being in the moment. It's a lot easier to do when you're outside than inside of, like, being in the moment. But I was saying to Nick on the way in, like, I was waiting at the train station. I got there a bit early. I was just standing there for 20 minutes watching people go by. And time just, like, flicked by. It's just, yeah, just so good to spend a big chunk of my time doing that. There's too many worries in life to, you know, stew on things like that. Like,
and is that always that that sort of emphasis for you on sort of being present and appreciating life and what's around you? When did that sort of become a priority for you? When did you realise that that is a good way for you to live?
Quite early on, I think.
Wow, really?
Yeah. Like my parents are quite relaxed and, yeah, just quite early on, just I was a listener more than a talker. So I just sit and listen and let people do their own thing and just watch the world, really. Even through school, I just didn't really do any work. Like, just I knew I got, you know, to certain level, and there was never that urgency to push through. It's more just I'm going to sit in class and listen to the teacher and listen to the chaos that's going on and just be right here. But the mind does wander when you're not exactly where you want to be. Like, I still live with my parents now, which is not ideal, but it's enjoyable and cheap. When you start bringing in other things of, like, I need to move out, that's where pressure starts coming in, rush, urgency, and there's no end to that. You're never going to get to the end of that. So what is the point in even starting?
Yeah.
Just chill out. Life comes to you, what you need. Yeah, I found, like, with the Instagram, for me, it's a personal journal, like the writing. So I don't write to tell people a story. It's like, maybe I do, but, like, yeah, it's a personal journal. So it's mostly for me, for my purposes, to get out what's happened. And each post is like past, present, future. So I'll reflect back on something that's happened in the past, make it relevant to what's going on now, and then I'll use it as a manifestation tool to bring me what I want in the future.
Mm.
It is very much like a journal, isn't it?
Yeah.
Your writing. There's a sort of sense of, I think, of searching for something in there.
Mm-hmm.
There's solitude, yeah. I think. But you also talk about a lot for the joy of you have of meeting people, yeah, and the collaborations. And I did wonder how the writing of that informs perhaps your day-to-day life and perhaps your work as well, your artwork. And how do you reflect back on it? Do you find yourself ever scrolling back and looking at older posts?
No, I don't scroll back.
Just forward. Yeah.
Occasionally I'll flick back to look at the photos, just a little reminder of what I've done, but I don't really look at the words. They take me so long to write. it's like I can remember them almost.
Really?
Yeah, just, you know, that sort of time of my life, I know what I was doing and what I was wanting, and
yeah,
that moment of flow, I just, yeah, just...
Is it a way almost of helping you process as well that experience of that day by writing it, and then you can let go of it.
Telling story, but also use it to influence others or inspire others. Not influence. That's not a very nice word, but inspire others to live a life true to themselves and to get outside. Have fun. Like, it doesn't really matter. Like, yeah. Yeah. And then, yeah, I just use it to not influence my day, because if you are doing things to post about, it's not, you're not living your life for you, you're living your life for Instagram. Sure. I've a bit of a weird relationship with Instagram at the moment. Like,
you have a love hate thing there, is there?
At the moment, I used to just love it, you know, just sharing and being in that community, but because I want to take it to an online community, so a real life community, and I'm not really sure how to do that, but there's just a bit of a resistance there to share. I don't know what that is going to turn into in the future.
Well, so tell me a bit about the resistance there. Is that the resistance from you or resistance from others?
Resistance from me.
Yeah.
I'd prefer to have real-life conversations than messages on the internet. I do get some fantastic messages and invitations, and people tell me that, like, they're inspired by my writing and my journey, and they're going to quit their job and stuff less. And I'm like, yes, you know, here we go.
That's
like,
what I set out to do. Yeah.
Not quite ruin people's careers, but...
But it's so interesting what you say about that, what it gives you in terms of an opportunity to be present and, you know, something that sort of puts you in those ideal situations to be present. And I think a lot of people go through their whole lives without sort of realizing the value of that, realizing the value of appreciating the present moment and noticing and sitting and sort of not being kind of constantly motivated and that moving forward and all of that. And I think it's such a great thing. It's so great that you realise that from such an early age. I think you're really lucky.
Yeah.
I think there's people that are sort of... There are people that would spend a lot of money on sort of therapy and sort of working through stuff in their life. You know, perfectly well people that would spend a long time to sort of get to that point. So it's really interesting you start... That you've got that from a young age and you've really sort of built on that and built this wonderful sort of body of work and experiences around it. I'm just interested in that... What you're saying around the sort of flow, getting into that flow state when you're writing, and, you know, what for you are the sort of best conditions for writing? You know, time of day, place, you know, what's the sort of the ideal writing scenario for you?
It sort of happens. It brews over a little while, a few hours, and then I'm like, yeah, I need to, like, find... somehow to make a picture that I can share on the internet. It's not about the pictures anymore. Probably never had been. It's, you know, it's just the writing can't be there on its own. It needs a photo. So I'd form a sort of idea of what sort of theme I was wanted to share with that. And then I'll get that photo from somewhere. Recently, I don't know if you saw, it was little pictures of coloured doves.
Yeah,
the coloured
doves, yeah.
So, yeah, they're great.
Colin, is it?
Tim.
Tim.
Always call them all Tim. All of them. Tim, Timmy, Timette. Don't matter. Start shouting hello at them. Just the little thing. So I'd probably, you know, if I wanted to talk about the river, I'd make a journey to the river. The River Ouse, it's like much bigger in Lewes than it is like near me. It's just, yeah, a little trickle. It'd be brewing over like a few hours or a few days, and then I'll just find a little quiet corner. In my parents' house, which is a bit of a struggle to do that, but it takes about half hour to write something, maybe even longer. Just have a cup of tea and see how it goes, and then... Yeah, press send and never read it again.
Yeah, right. So if I want to understand, so I haven't met you before and want to understand what inspired you to start this, what the journey is. I mean, obviously, it's not really about the destination, it's about the journey, what journeys you are having. And I think there is a lot around nature and what you have found about nature that you think
that maybe perhaps is a mission for you to, for others to actually understand how important, you know, spending time in nature is, how important of being present is. It all forms part of almost like a mission. So if I was to say, what really is your mission in all of this? Can you help me to understand, or anyone to understand, what, why, and why this journey that you are on?
I think it's just not a mission for other people. It's just how I want to spend my life. Just being quite gentle in my journey. And if I inspire others to play along with that, great. But it's very much a selfish sort of, I don't want to be running around like a headless chicken all my life, or playing catch up to like the ticked boxes of society. And so I've just stopped playing on that game, and just enjoy myself. Like it's purely just to have life. Is for me, it's just purely to have fun, and take everything as it comes. That I do have challenges sometimes, you know, like I don't always have enough money to you know, like pay my rent and stuff, and I have to do work that I don't necessarily want to do to find that money. So there's not a, you know, security in that, but there is at the same time, because I know deep down that I can do it.
Yeah. So what I think what you were saying is that you have seen that the whole catch up, the whole running around, you know, society is almost being materialistic mostly, and that can actually cause a lot of people to not live in the present. They are always constantly thinking about the next thing.
Yeah.
And you have realized that actually that do not necessarily bring happiness, and for you, your happiness is being able to take life slow, and being able to enjoy the present and spending more time in nature. Is that how, am I getting it right? What your sort of mission is? And you've realized that if you could live as minimum as possible, then you wouldn't have so much to worry about, but then you could spend more time, you know, enjoying the nature. Is that
nature is community as well, so fellow humans are nature. Like there's a disconnect, like you could say that a lot of people don't think we're nature, and it's always humans against nature, you know, with current climate and stuff. It's all like, oh yeah, we need to control these rivers and stuff when they burst their banks. But that is us. We are doing that. It's just want people to realise that it's all connected, and just build that community again. Because we don't. I come from, I grew up being a builder, so it's very insular. So you're just in one little town, often working on your own or with the people that are teaching you. And then you go to like the builders merchants, and people, like the question they ask you is, are you busy? They don't ask you how you are or anything, or, you know, what good things have you been doing and stuff. It's like, are you busy? And it doesn't get any deeper than that. So it's like this treadmill, like, yeah, it's just very weird, very weird. And I was like, I don't want to be a part of this. This catch up and putting pressure on other people just to make you feel a bit better about the pressure that you've got. Just all those tick boxes. I was like, yeah, I'm not going to get involved with those.
Have you kind of felt that? Because obviously the opposite of what you're talking about is being slow and taking time to really take everything around you in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you mentioned when you were doing your journey this time around, you wanted to take your time and really soak it in. So perhaps you kind of think that maybe nature is slow. You know, the best to spend time in a slow pace. Is it something that you kind of...
Yeah, it's a lot slower than humans, and you know, the bigger picture of that. It's just calming. That's probably the word. It's just calms everything.
It's not demanding of you.
No.
Yeah.
Well,
or is it?
Not. It is when it's raining and.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Sleep, making your own bed and sleeping there.
Which is
traveling to Cornwall over the course of 8 days. That's demanding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did share that on the internet as all went, which kind of regretted, but. It was great because you're bringing all those people with you as well. You're not on your own.
Hmm.
But it rained, you know, 70% of the time. You know, I'd have like an hour a day of sunshine and I was just soaked. I remember one time just being, it was in the morning and I had to pack my tent up. It's all wet. And then I got to this like little play park with a shelter and I sat under there for like an hour wondering what to do. Which only had one option, which was to get wet. And then there was this like leftover Chinese takeaway, like the remnants of that, like a chicken chow mein.
Find.
Yeah. and then a few empty containers and then like a little fruit shoot thing. So I knew there'd like been like some sort of parent child feast and then they just left the litter there, which was bizarre. But I just looked at this like yeah, it's Chinese, and I was so hungry. Just, yeah, it's so cold, and just, yeah, really raining, really hard, and obviously didn't eat it, but it's just...
that's not how I thought that story was going to end.
Yeah, I was waiting for it.
Yeah, I was getting hungry.
No one would have known.
No. You could have. It's just in the corner of my eye, like, just looking at me. I was like, no, that's a step too far. So on I went. And then the ferry wasn't travelling because of, like, high winds and, yeah, big waves. And so I actually got blown off course of my little commute route, which, yeah, brought up other challenges of... that happens quite a lot, you know, and got blown off. And I had to, instead of taking the water ferry, I took the train from Truro to Falmouth, which it took me hours to get to Truro, you know. Well, I didn't have any other option. And, you know, the things go through your head of like, oh, this is it. You know, this is, I'm not on my trail anymore.
Yeah, sure.
What happens here?
Mm-hmm.
So you're just a bit like your I don't know what the word is.
Plans or your journey is going off course.
Yeah, you're off course. Off course, and so the options are to go home or do you continue? Yeah. So I had that for about, you know, 4 hours of going down these little lanes to saw on my phone there was a campsite, so go and check it out, and there wouldn't be a campsite there. And then you'd go back again. So, and it's constant. Like, you get these little questions, and the answer's not clear. And you're like, maybe it's a sign that I've got to go home.
Mm.
But the time was, like, in the afternoon, and sure, I'm not going to get a train home, like, at all. So it was just push on. Well, I got over that one. It's the temptation to go home is huge, which I find... Walking in Sussex it's easy to get home. There's so many train stations.
Yeah.
So whenever I'm further afield, I've got no choice but to just get wet and get grumpy.
Yeah.
You know, and then, yeah, it's just grumpy, and then 10 minutes later, you're just like, this is amazing.
Yeah, so do you find when, if you're on a journey and it does sort of go off course or does go in a different... like a literal or figurative direction that you weren't expecting,
mm-hmm.
do you find that you're able to be accepting of that and to sort of move past it, or is it just annoying?
It's annoying, but it takes like 10 minutes. Like, I'm very aware of, I listen to the signs of what the world is telling me. So if I feel like it's racking up, like these little mistakes or inconveniences, and it gets to the point where I'm like, yeah, it's trying to tell me something here. I need to change something massively. But most of the time it's, yeah, just overcome and adapt and change route, and it doesn't really matter. Like, yeah, like if you have to, you know, get a lift to another part of the journey because you're not going as fast as you'd hoped and you're on a bit of a time limit, nobody's really going to, you know, tell you off for doing that. It's only on your, yeah, you are.
You're holding yourself to account, yeah, I suppose, on how to...
Just don't be so hard on yourself, just...
Yeah.
You're there to have fun, you know, just don't... It doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
So what I'm hearing is that there are times, you know, like all of us, you know, even spending time in nature and becoming more present, there are times that you still face challenges where you snap yourself out of it, going, well, by the way, it's fine. I mean, it's an adventure.
Yeah.
So irrespective of, you know, I think that sometimes there could be that glorification, that, you know, being getting into nature, everything is fine. It isn't. It gets cold. It gets wet. It gets challenging, and I think you've just said that if it happens, you have a moment, and 10 minutes time you're like, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
So it is still sort of...
There's still elements of stress, but it's very in the moment stress, and
a different sort of stress.
Yeah, different sort of stress.
It's a healthy stress. It's a natural stress.
Yeah. Yeah.
Compared to the stress of work. Things like that, things in life that can give you sort of ongoing stress.
Yeah, the ones that are not easily fixed are the ones that build up. But I think just being outside gives you exposure to those problems. There's a lot of problems that come up, especially early on, like, you know, blisters and stuff. Everyone gets them, like, especially like as a beginner to long distance walking, and just how you adapt, and it's like the exposure to sort of small inconveniences, and they just build up, and you get like a resilience to the disasters.
Yeah. Do you ever forage for food?
Yeah, yeah.
What's your bushcraft like?
It's okay. I am okay. I spent some time. Have you seen the series called Alone?
No, I don't think I have.
It's about... I didn't go on it, but it's in Canada, and like people get left in the Canadian wilderness for as long as they can survive with 10 items from a list. So that could be a tarp and a knife and an axe or saw, things like this, or like the thing to... the ferro rod to start a fire. But there was one in England, which I've done, where it was, I think, like 5 days, called the Grizz. It was in Tunbridge Wells, so kind of in Kent.
Not too far. You would have known the area very well.
But it's, half in Kent. It's over the border. But we were left there. It's owned by army veterans, and so it was for charity. We had to pay it, so half of the money went to army veterans, homeless veterans, to get them homed, and the other half went to food banks. And we basically got left in the woods for 5 days, and we had to build our shelter. And there was like little army challenges where they'd have like an air rifle and they'd have to shoot targets, and we'd get like a little bit of food. And it was challenging to be so hungry.
Were you as a group?
No, alone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you come across anyone doing the challenge when you were there? Like, how many other people were doing the challenge at the same time?
It was all quite small, and we'd come together to do these challenges. With the air rifle and things like that, and like identification things of like plants. It'd just be little tests, just because they couldn't.
So there were some team activities, cooperation.
We weren't allowed to help each other. It was all individual, but we were just there at the same time.
Right,
so if we didn't complete the challenge or tasks, we wouldn't get any food, and that was the end of it.
And so, how much of what you ate was foraged, and how much of what you ate was stuff that you were able to win through challenges and whatnot?
It was mostly through challenges, because I think it's just for insurance purposes. They wouldn't let people starve, and it was in a commercial forest, like a pine forest, like planted, so there wasn't like a nice understory of, you know, loads to eat, and the mushroom sort of situation weren't good because it was like in summer. I say summer, we hardly get summer here, we get a week or so, but luckily it didn't rain or any storms. But we had to, you know, find our own water sources and filter all the water and stuff, but like, I was hungry, and we don't get exposed to that.
No. You collect things from the landscape, and you make things from them. You collect grasses and reeds, clay, stones. You weave baskets.
Yeah.
And you make pottery, some sort of rudimentary pots and things.
Yeah.
And I've seen some paintings that you've done with clay.
Yeah.
And there's quite a bit of experimentation. I've seen you've collected different clays and you've tested them for shrinkage. So there's a real sort of exploration of landscape and material. So I wondered if you could talk us through your process and sort of from maybe a typical day of what you might do. And also the second part of that question, I wondered whether you had the idea first and then went and looked for the material, or whether you would be out wandering and you would see some things and then you would have an idea and then take them and use them to make something.
It's both. Predominantly out and about and find something. So that's where my little title of material-led artist comes along. So whatever I can get my hands on. So a lot of it started from building waste and throwing away loads of clay that's like looked perfect and was so good to play with, and then you'd pay someone to get it taken away and like you'd never see it again and you don't know where it's gone. So I was just like curious to know firstly where that's going and what can be done and to stop that sort of stuff.
But
there's like ethical sort of things of, like, you look at your cup and you don't necessarily realise that that is the earth, just your morning coffee cup. That is, like, the earth that you're drinking out of. And it's just weird to think of, like, how... Like, where does that come from? There's a lot of cups in my parents' house or my home that I don't even know where that sort of come from. And, yeah, it's just weird. So there's... We can't all go and dig up clay from our rivers to make our cups and stuff. So it's a curiosity of where the line is of, you know, ethical foraging and supplying people with what they need. So, that's my main thing, is I put that question to everything that I see. Recently dug some clay out of, like, the pidding hoe out of the ewes, like, just on the bank, you know, and played with it and was learning to hand build pottery with Elaine Bolt over in Brighton. She lives in Lewes, but her studio's...
I've heard of her. Yeah, I have. Yeah, I might even follow her.
She's a lovely lady. So I went and learned with her. I was living on a farm and selling my baskets through the farm shop, and she bought one when she was just passing through, and then followed me on Instagram and kept checking in to see how I was doing and stuff. And then she had this last minute space on one of her courses, so I just went for like 6 weeks. It was great fun. I just learned so much, just asking questions and questions, you know, just everything. It was just, very, very informative. So I'll just go through these little rabbit holes of of like, what's going on here? And I'm just going to find out.
So you're trying to learn about the landscape through the materials and through what they can be used for.
Yeah. Just building that connection with that stuff, and then it leads on to community with other people, which is great. And then you can teach other people what you know. So it's a real economy of.
Do you do any collaborative building construction?
I wanted to get into that. So I learned building construction from my dad, and it was just us two with the other services of plumber and electricians. But I want to really build a community of builders, because you look at the builders and they're just white men doing it, and I want to bring some diversity into that, and to close the circles of supply, so we know where the woods come from and other stuff.
Is this full circle living?
Yeah.
What that's about, is it?
Yeah. So, full circle, as in we'd know where our homes have come from and who's built them, and then everything inside that, the cups and stuff. So it will be a house building collective, and then a living collective in terms of having an online shop for homewares and an art gallery as well, to just bring in that community. And I don't want it to be all about me. That is a lot of, I sort of feel like life is just, especially the Patrick of Sussex sort of Instagram writing, it's just me. And I just want to bring other people and highlight other people, what they do. I just don't really know what I'm doing to create that. It's just a learning curve, a huge learning curve.
Well, you're putting it out there, aren't you?
Yeah.
And you're letting it evolve rather than, I guess, you could keep it all back and try and get it all perfect. But
I think
that's a good way to do it, because people are going to see it and start to hopefully chip in. And other people have these ideas too,
Yeah.
And sometimes you need to wave a flag.
Mm-hmm.
So that people can see you, and then you the right people will gravitate towards you.
And I recently saw something that said, 70% is good enough. So I'm not chasing for perfect or anything I do. It's just 70% of I do.
That's a great philosophy.
Don't
just try yourself like round the bend trying to get everything absolutely perfect, because it's a fool's errand, right?
Yeah, it just takes so much more time, and you're never going to be perfect. I'm a recovering perfectionist. That's what
a recovering
perfectionist. Brilliant. What a great
expression. That is what. Let it go. Just let it be what it is.
Picking up the point about people, and at the start of the session, you were talking about having met communities and sort of learned about communities within Sussex through your journeys. Can you say a little bit more about that and what those communities are and what you've learned?
Yeah, so it's a lot of individuals. Mostly go for walks with individuals, and then they tell me of something cool going on, so I try and sort of gravitate towards seeing what that is. And then it turns out that, have mutual friends and stuff, and then it just creates a massive web of, knowledge, and it's really great. But, over at Lovebrook, I don't know if you've seen Lovebrook over in Kingston, their market garden. So I go there randomly, I just turn up. You're supposed to, book a little slot, but I just turn up, they're like, "Al Patrick's here." But that's pure chance that I went there, just for a friend that got invited to one of their, it was their year party or 6 month party or something. So I just went with someone that I'd met through Instagram, and then it's just there's loads of people that turn up a couple of times a week to just grow and have chat and have some food together, and then you can take some vegetables home with you, which is great.
Yeah, that's a lovely thing they've got going there, isn't it? I'd only found out about that recently.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and you like, you know, within the last like 6 months or something.
Yeah.
No idea at all. It sounds beautiful.
Yeah, it's just great. Like, there's just such a variety of people there. And just, and then it just, something just brings them together. And like, it's not often that we get to put our hands actually in the earth to grow things either. Not all of us have access to that. So it's good that they're doing that. And they do a lot of like other social things. Of there's Sussex Surplus, which take all of the surplus food from places and give it to those who need it. So it's really, really good community going on there. Mm. Yeah, and then there's like little individuals of like artists and stuff, and yeah, so it's really good, really good. Like one time I got invited to do a course with Ruby Taylor, which she lives in Lewes as well. I think there's just a lot of wonderful people living in Lewes, and she teaches people basketry. This is how I learned. Someone couldn't go on one of her courses. It was already paid for, and she messaged me. I still haven't met the lady, but I'm very grateful. She's just like, we can't go on this course, and it's tomorrow. Do you want to go? So I was like, yes.
Amazing. And then that got you into making baskets, and that's, you were and then you were living at a farm selling baskets, and that's how you met the artist that you end up with.
Yeah,
learning pottery.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's just pure chance and just being in it for, like just a bit of fun.
And there's like a bit of a history of basket making in Sussex anyway, isn't there, right?
Yeah. Well, everywhere really, but it's a dying trade. And yeah, I'd like to be able to stick to doing it. Well, I say this, I probably wouldn't, but I wish I could just stick to doing that, you know, and become perfect at that and just, you know. But I can't. I just love being a beginner. And just I used to really think I was useless at like pretty much everything, and then I realised that every time I get kind of good at it, I'm going to go and do something else now. And it took a while for that to twig. Like, I keep changing the goalposts, and you know, I'm pretty good at. Well, I'm okay at a lot of things. Not amazing at anything, but yeah, we definitely need a lot of people that just want to stick to doing those old crafts, but people don't want to pay the money that they're worth, and that's what it comes down to. So they're not doing it. But
it's like, nice to have those varied interests, though. I think.
Yeah,
I know what you mean, because you do need the experts. You know, the people who are really, really, really good at one thing. But then you can also be really, really good at being average at lots of things.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what I am.
Yeah.
And the beginner mindset's a great place to be. They always talk about that with meditation. They always say, like, it's good to go into it with, like, a fresh beginner mindset and not feel like you're, like, advanced or an expert in it, that you really are sort of coming into it new.
You see the most... Yeah. You get the most out of it when you're learning, because you learn quickly, don't you, to a certain point.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, your learning curve slows sort of as you perfect it.
Plateaus, and then...
It's that plateau.
You know, and that's when you have to have, like, a lot of... self-discipline of, you know, getting up and doing that
every day, which I
do struggle with that sometimes, you know. It's very easy to, like, yeah. I've done, when I was living on the farm, sort of living in my van, making baskets, I'd just done the next most necessary thing if I needed to, you know. It was as simple as that, like, I needed to wash up, it would just be like, okay, I'm going to wash up, and then if I need to turn some money, I'd just be like, how are we going to earn some money? And it's just as simple as that. And so next I want to be a bit more forward thinking with how I'll spend my energy. So that's where I'm at the moment, just like, how do I bring in certain elements to be a bit more secure with, you know, income. Without being trapped, like, not trapped as in trap, but I just love my freedom.
Yeah,
I'm very free.
Maybe self-employed then, I guess.
Yeah.
Just, yeah, yeah.
But it looks like you are self-employed at the moment.
Yeah, I'm correct. Yeah.
And what you are looking to do is to continue to create, continue to do what you are doing and enjoying it, but also to be able to get some sort of living to allow you to do what you want to do. So it's like, you know, buying your creativity, if you like. You know, everything that you do, you want to, or make, you want to then use it to be able to buy free time to be doing the best that you really want to do. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, it's a trade-off, and just want more structure in my life. That's what it comes down to, just a bit more structure.
Yeah, I think it's so great. You want it all. You want to have a really good balance of spending so much time, you know, to doing the things that you really enjoy doing. And I think it's really known that when you are creating, because we as people are at our best when we are being creative.
Yeah.
And I think when you are creating, you enjoy the creativity, you know, either through your art, through nature, through walking, through any discoveries that you are doing, you're trying to create. But then you also find that you have to make some sort of an income to be able to allow you to continue what you are doing.
It's just the way the world is, really. It's money is a tool to be used, and you can use that to, you know, speed up the process a little bit. It's a trade of time. Money is a trade of time, and you just got to find the right balance. A lot of my writing is about balance. Just finding that balance with everything. And you go one way too far, and then you can just adjust and go back the other way, and it's just constant, just back and forth.
You seem very open to the world as well. And by that I mean, you sort of look up and see what's coming your way, rather than, it's very easy to get, but I do it, lost in my own thoughts when I'm walking around. I miss things, maybe miss opportunities, but you seem sort of quite open to opportunities. And I read a post of yours, and I don't know the details, but you'd stopped in a lay-by and you saw some people with high-vis jackets digging, and you sort of went over and you asked them what they were doing, and then you spent the whole day with them digging roots out of the sand for lizards to make burrows.
And
that was your day. And you achieved that by being open, going out there and speaking to them, and that could have been missed, couldn't it?
It could have been, and it took me a lot to go and ask what these dudes are doing.
Right, yeah.
They just had like these little lizards, and like, I can't remember what it said, an arc, on the New Forest. Yeah, the New Forest. And then just ask one question, and then all of a sudden it was just all go. I was in some random person's car going across the New Forest, and then we were just digging.
So you went in with scrapes. Them into the car, and they drove off with you? Yeah, okay, yeah. So they took you on for the day?
Yeah,
great.
I didn't have to wear high-vis though.
And what, but you learned from that, that was obviously the right decision to go and approach them.
Yeah.
And that must stick with you, and now you sort of keep looking for those opportunities.
Yeah, definitely. It worked. I probably did do something similar to that before that wasn't so, you know, it probably was a smaller step than that.
Of course.
Just go and ask people what they're doing. It's great. You get some...
Can I give help out?
Yeah.
It's a wonderful way to approach life.
Yeah. Well, it just gets me loads of fun stories to tell. And that's love telling stories. I've got so many. I was driving home from just a bit of a little van journey and just saw them I'm walking from village to village in Sussex to try and find my home. So I've plotted a route on the OS map of ticking off as many villages and small towns, apart from Bognor Regis. I'm going to go through Bognor Regis eventually. It's a spiral, so I'm going on the outside from Hereteith up. I've already done this part, but from Hereteith up to Forest Row, and then along like the Kent-Sussex border down to Rye, and then along, not through the coast, because it's too built up really to find a camp spot every night. So it goes through Battle, and then to Eastbourne, and then along the South Downs, and yeah, above Worthing sort of thing, and that's sort of where I'm at Arundel. And then it's going to go down to Littlehampton, and then across to Bognor Regis, Chichester, back round to Gatwick, and then round again, like 10 miles in. But I've just met so many wonderful people and had so many stories of, because I'm trying to find somewhere I want to live.
Yeah.
As soon as I see someone, I like ask them like how they've ended up living here. And that is like the deepest question you could ask,
because
it gets to, you know, just their life story. Yeah. And then I just flow with what they say, and they will tell me like little information about the actual village and stuff. And instantly I can tell that like something's not for me, and sometimes it might be. And yeah, just it's really good.
And where have you seen or who have you spoken to in places that made you think, oh, that, yeah, is there a particular place, or are there any particular places that you've visited so far that you think, yeah, that could be for me? The second part will be, is there anywhere where have you thought, fuck, no. but where have you, yeah, is there anywhere that's sort of, that you've really warmed to?
There's not at the moment, but it's a journey of many journeys. It's a search of many journeys, in the fact that I'm bringing in commitments through my own work and stuff, which make me gravitate to a certain area. So it is kind of just ticking them off to make sure there's nowhere better than where I might end up.
Sure.
Because I've lived in Hereteith, that sort of area, which is not where I want to live full time. For like I'm 32 years old, so I've lived there that long, and it's taken a long time to build that connection with the land. So I don't think it's going to be too far away from there, but we want to make sure. But there's just little pockets of wonderful things. So there's like Forest Row, which is very weird, but nice.
It must be on a ley line or something. It's got like a really cool, weird vibe to it, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think it's a place, from stories that I've heard, I think it's a place of where people go to heal. I've heard of people from London moving there, you know, this is just, I can't really remember the full details, but, you know, this is like second-hand sort of information, or maybe like 17th-hand by now. It's the bankers or something like that coming down with loads of money, and then spending time in Forest Row and changing what they want to do with that money to like a really good cause.
Right.
And other times of like heartbreak, and they've just ended up in Forest Row, and then they spend some time there and then eventually move on. It's a really really weird place. But it's just all little things like that, and yeah, strange place. But
So I mean, what do you look for in a place to look for? What are your tick boxes?
It's very practical. Like, there has to be a pub and a small shop that I can buy sustainably sourced food from, really. There's not too much more than that.
A pub and a village.
A village store.
Farm shop.
Farm shop.
And Forest Row's got Seasons there, right? So there's one in Lewis, but I think Robin, the chap who owns it, their original shop was in Forest Row, and he was telling me about it, just telling me some like banana stories of the sort of community in there. Like, actually, it was centred around lockdown. The stories he told me around around sort of like yeah, just various things that happened within the community during lockdown. But like that's like such an asset for that village, that little town, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just those two things really, and the little sense of community. Yeah, there's a little place called High Hurstwood, which I cycled my bike to one time. It's just hardly anything. I don't think there's a shop, but that
Where
sort
is
of
that?
Area.
Where is that?
East Sussex, outside of Crowborough.
Right.
A little bit south of Crowborough.
Okay. It's and what is it called?
High Hurstwood. It's definitely a pub, but I don't know if there's much more than that. So it's just like these little pockets that I just find myself in. And I didn't walk there. I was cycling to see it. From home to a place called Argus Hill, where there's a windmill. I just thought, I just wanted a random little day out. So I went to see it, and then there was a massive hedge. So I couldn't even see the windmill. So it was a good, you know, day out, a whole day out to get there and back, and I couldn't even see it. Couldn't get near it because there was a massive fence and... Great day out.
So, have you plotted your whole route, or are you you're just doing it as you go, and you're just keeping track of where you've been?
I've plotted the whole route,
right?
But
so, how far along are you? You know,
so it's roughly shaped like a diamond. You know, of the outside, I'm like 2/3 of the way round.
Okay,
and then it'll come in. Same sort of thing, 10 miles and go again. I've spent, you know, I've done it because I wanted to do it all in one go, and I tried to do that and it didn't work out and it wasn't enjoyable. I stopped after a week of walking, after I got to Rye, or a bit further than that, because of how inspired I was. Because, you know, I'd stop in like little art galleries and stuff and I'd be like, oh, that's amazing. Someone was just... So I was just wanted to get home to make some stuff.
Sure.
So I couldn't stay out for any longer than that. And then I've done a week, and then like 4 days, and sometimes 2 days where I'd get soaked, and I'd be like, this is drudgery. I need to stop. But I try and do it when it's not too hot, because being ginger, like, I'll get burnt. Early. You know, April and stuff, and then you get just rain at the time, and then away. I like November's perfect time for walking, but it's dark at 5 o'clock, so it's not really great. So there's always an excuse.
And what's it like sleeping outside at this time of the year?
It's great. I try to do. It stopped like in COVID times, but I've done a wild camp a month. So every month I'd have to go out for a wild camp. I'd done about like 16 months before COVID. Haven't started that back up, but naturally I'm out quite often anyway. But yeah, in winter, and you wake up, your tent just frozen solid, and you got a really nice warm sleeping bag. It's just amazing.
Yeah, but I think it's actually, apart from it being free, is the experience. This is what, we are made to be able to do that. Our ancestors were doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we didn't have all these comfort. But again, I think your experience is actually, you're creating it for yourself. It's something that you want to do. And you've said if other people are inspired to do it, then they can do it. But that leads me to the question. Or are you thinking of some sort of educational pack, as in a book, or as in some sort of, you know, because you're doing a lot of writing, but do you think if someone was to follow your journey, is there going to be one place that you can actually, you know, sort of put certain ports of things you've done? You're looking for a place to live, so which takes you to so many villages. You are traveling across Sussex, and some of the beautiful things you see in the animals and nature. If someone wanted to do maybe a quarter, something quite simple of what you're doing, what they could follow, is there something in a pipeline that you think, or something you're thinking of that you think you can join together to give more or easier accessibility to people if they wanted to?
Yeah. From my journey from village to village in Search Home, I'm going to write a book which will not be like a guidebook as such. It's going to be by the way, because when you're having a conversation with someone, they're like, oh, by the way, and that is the most important thing that they can tell you. And
nice.
Yeah, and by the way, as in, like, I was just going for a little walk. So there will be that of, this is, yeah, it's going to be a journey of physical journey and my sort of learnings through life, you know, like, we don't talk about it too much, but like men's mental health and stuff, that's a huge thing that, you know, it's avoided. So it'll be that, and then, yeah, it's just, it won't be like a guidebook, or I probably won't, you know, take people on, I don't want to lead people on walks and stuff.
And is this something that, you know, because, is that because you're sort of doing it on with your gut instinct and you're free, you don't really want to restrict yourself in telling people you've got to do X, Y, Z? Is that what you're trying to get yourself away from? Because it's for you, really, is it?
Yeah, I just want to inspire people to be curious about things. I don't want to inspire them to do what I do, or them to be curious. Like, like you say about the camping and sleeping in the cold and stuff, it's not for you. Like, that's okay. Like, but hearing my sort of approach to life could inspire you to do something else that, you know, I wouldn't do, but you think this is great use of time. It's just that little, not so transactional, like, or teachery vibes, just I'm doing this, and you know, you can live your life how you want as well. Just have fun. That is the main message. Just go and have fun.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of Chalk It Up, and if you did, please subscribe, leave a review, and share it with friends and family. You can also follow us on Instagram at Chalk It Up Sussex Podcast, where you can find exclusive content including video footage of some of our shows. Thank you for listening.